Okay, we'll get started. Is my mic on? It is on now. Okay. Good morning, everyone. Thanks a lot for joining. Today I'm going to talk about Hadoop on Windows. So it's really nice to be here. My name is Rohit Bakshi. I'm a product manager at a company called Hortonworks. And what we do at Hortonworks is we basically work with Apache Hadoop. And we've done a lot of work, so one of my projects at Hortonworks is to bring the entire Hadoop ecosystem and Apache Hadoop as a project, and I'll go into details and talk about more about what that is as a data management platform. We work closely with Microsoft to bring that to run natively on Windows. So what you see in HD Insight, if you have Windows Server in your enterprise and you want to deploy Hadoop, you can actually use Hadoop and the Hortonworks data platform to run on Windows, and that's what we've worked on together with Microsoft. So it's very exciting. I'm very excited to be here and talk about the technology and how it can be used. So what are we going to do today? Today we'll kind of do an intro first and talk about why we're here and why this is important. So talk about the modern data architecture and what that means and where does Hadoop fit in. Then we'll talk about and introduce Hadoop for Windows, what it means to run on Windows, what capabilities does it bring, what is a Hadoop distribution. And then we'll go into and really dive into the technology, the different components of the Hortonworks data platform built on Apache Hadoop, and how each of those components can be used to build out your data platform, to build out your data workflows, and to do data processing at scale. And then throughout the presentation, I'll take questions. So if you have a question, just raise your hand, and I'll call on you as we're talking through the slides, and I'll repeat the question for everyone to hear, and we can have a bit of an interactive discussion. So feel free to raise your hands if you have any questions at all. So let's start with why we're here and why this is important, right? So what does Hadoop do, and why do we care about that? I look at this slide, right, and I look at there's an increasing amount of data, there's increasing amount of complexity of data, and what does this mean? About 5 or 6 years ago, before I joined Hortonworks and before I started working with Hadoop, I actually was working on marketing mix modeling software. And what that meant is we created a software platform that would take inputs about all the different ways a company, a large company like P&G or Kellogg's, a large brand, would spend different types of marketing dollars on different types of avenues. So they would spend money on TV advertising, they would spend money on email marketing, they would spend money on radio advertising, right? Spending money on putting an ad to be spoken out by a radio DJ while the radio DJ is playing their music in the middle of that. So there's all these different types of money that was being spent, and then they wanted to track that and compare it to how that impacted or how sales occurred of their products across the country, across the world. Now, when we did that project, it was basically a data modeling and data analytics project, right? We would look at dimensions. If you think about, you know, different dimensions of how they spent money on advertising, we look at national dimensions. We look at dimensions of spending across state levels, across cities. And then we would map it to sales of products in those cities, in those states. That was the granularity that we went to, and that was a big project, and that required a big database to really power this. Over time and over the years, it would have been so much more powerful if we could say, I'm going to figure out how much money was spent on advertising to individuals who actually went to my brand's website, and then tie that to purchases they made. So in order to do that in a data processing, data analytics project, you would have to capture data and process it at the granularity of individual users, of zip codes, of people walking into a store and into each individual store and figuring out where they spent money, where they stopped in front of products, what they picked up and what they put down. And that's an example of all this data that can be generated and can be used in a processing environment to make it much more powerful and much more effective to figure out how to make decisions such as, which city do I put more money in from an advertising budget perspective? Which state is the most effective in terms of selling my product, and which state am I getting the most return from my advertising money? That's an example, and there's tons of examples where, you know, understanding transactions that happen with your customers, understanding how the customers and how your employees are interacting at every single moment, all that data coming together really provides you a comprehensive view and a comprehensive way of doing data management, making business decisions. And that's the big opportunity, right? That's what's really, really exciting, is that we have all this machine-generated data that's coming in, and is actually very useful across different industries. What that's doing to our technical architecture, you know, I have a slide here where I talk about how this machine-generated data, right? Data is being generated by supply chain machines, data being generated by web servers that are tracking different clicks and tracking different traffic across the different websites that a company has, data being generated by cars, data being generated by radio towers. All this information is actually growing at an exponential rate because people and companies are tracking and installing the systems to capture this data on a much more expanded and granular level. And what that's doing is that our existing data architectures that we have, right, your data warehouse, your relational database, capturing that data, and then providing that for doing your processing and then exposing that through a visualization BI reporting architecture, that's working well for a lot of different scenarios. But as this new deluge of data comes in, it's straining those systems. And that's where a new form of data processing, storage, and scale out processing is really coming in. And that's the opportunity for systems that, you know, people have called NoSQL, non-relational, distributed data processing. That's where Hadoop comes in. Hadoop comes in as a technology that lets you process data at scale, store data at scale, and it's a complement to your existing systems. So it's a complement to SQL Server. It's a complement to the analytic platform system that you would use from an MPP database perspective. That plus Hadoop provides you your comprehensive data platform to store all these different types of data sources and provide the comprehensive view across different dimensions, across different fact tables, to your business users, to the end customer, to the business to help make decisions. So let me talk about Hadoop for Windows now. Now we kind of introduced and talked about why it's important, why it's exciting, the technology that we have. So how many of you have heard about Hadoop or played with Hadoop? Okay, a bunch of people. Great. So Hadoop and the Hadoop ecosystem is a collection of components, as a lot of you know, right? There's different components for different pieces of functionality. And the power of Hadoop is that it's very modular. These things come together, different projects come together. I'll go into detail about some of the emerging and new projects coming together that provide new functionalities. But if you look at this, right, there's a set of different, all of these different functionalities, right, data governance, the ability to store data at scale, all these different data processing types and engines that sit on top of that scalable storage, security implementations, strong authorization, authentication, and operability, all of these are implemented as different projects that come together to form one big comprehensive data platform. And that's what the Hortonworks data platform is. It's basically a comprehensive platform comprising of all these different open source projects that come together to provide a Hadoop distribution. And this is a distribution that you can run on your Windows Server box. You can run in the cloud, you can run on Azure. It comes together to provide you a large, comprehensive data platform. To give you an example does everyone know that, or how many of you know about Apache and Apache open source? A few people, great. So Hadoop and Hadoop-related projects are open source projects. What that means is that anyone in the world, any company, any developer can actually contribute to Hadoop and the Hadoop ecosystem of projects and implement features, fix bugs. What's exciting and very powerful about that is that there's no one who owns the IP to Hadoop and the Hadoop ecosystem. It's a collection, it's owned by a nonprofit organization called Apache. And there's all these different projects that are Apache projects that are open and accessible to everyone in the world that come together in the Hortonworks data platform. So it's a completely open source platform. And you can see that, you know, over the years we've had multiple releases of the Hortonworks data platform, and it has tied in together the latest and greatest across all these different projects to give you that one comprehensive platform. And what's exciting about this is that there's companies from all over the world that contribute. Companies in Europe, companies in USA, companies in California, companies in Asia that all contribute to these different projects, and they come together to form the data platform. Now, I talked about how it's comprehensive, it's compatible, and it works together with your existing systems. So now, if you are a data, you're an enterprise organization, and you're working with SQL Server, Parallel Data Warehouse, Hadoop is a platform, is a technology that you bring in and you install and you run it alongside your existing relational database, right? It's really built, and we've done a lot of work with Microsoft to make sure it's seamless operability, seamless from a developer perspective. So you can write code and in .NET, you can write you can use your applications that talk ODBC to talk to Hadoop, just like you'd use ODBC to talk to SQL Server. It's interoperable in the sense that you can use the same management tool. So System Center can manage both Hadoop and both manage SQL Server and Parallel Data Warehouse. You can load data into both, and there's movement of data between the two different systems as well. So this is all to give you a data architecture, a data platform that involves both your relational system and Hadoop in one common data platform. And so now let's talk about the technology behind it, right? What really powers the Hortonworks distribution, and what really powers and gives Hadoop the scalability and the effectiveness that it has? It's really this core project, which is called Apache Hadoop. And there's a whole ecosystem of tools around it and projects around it. But at the core, it's Apache Hadoop. And Apache Hadoop consists of two things: storage and processing. Let me talk about those two, start off with. So Apache Hadoop, when you break it down into its simple technical components, starts with the Hadoop distributed file system. And the Hadoop distributed file system is basically a software technology that lets you say, I have tens or hundreds of Windows Server nodes or thousands of Windows Server nodes, and I want to deploy software that basically combines all those Windows Server nodes into one cluster, into one source of processing power and storage power. So I can install Hadoop, enterprises worldwide have deployed Hadoop to connect, let's say, 100 machines. Each of those machines has disk attached to them. Each of those machines has RAM, CPU, all part of those machines. And to an application, to an end user, when you install Hadoop and run it on those hundreds of Windows Server machines, you have one large file system that's striped across the entire set of machines. And that's powerful, right? Now you have a mechanism to load data into this 100-node cluster of Windows Server machines. Because it's distributed across those machines, you provide fault tolerance and redundancy. If any one of those machines were to go down, if even a set of those machines were to go down, the data that's loaded in is redundant in the sense that there's multiple copies of every single file you write in that's striped across the different machines. So even if a set of machines were to go down and fail, your data would not be lost, and it would be accessible on other machines in the cluster. And that's the power of when you start scaling out your hardware infrastructure, you take advantage of that redundancy, you take advantage of that fault tolerance capability. Now, because it's also distributed, you get the power of parallel loading, parallel data writes, and parallel storage. So we talked about HDFS. Which goes across these different machines. On top of HDFS, on the same set of infrastructure, you have the processing that's built on and uses the same infrastructure, the same RAM and CPU that your storage is attached to. And so when you submit a job or you submit a processing application, that application is broken up by the system into hundreds of pieces, hundreds of parallel tasks, and run across the entire set of machines. So not only do you get scalable storage, but you also get scalable compute and processing. This is all designed from technology architecture to work on commodity hardware. What that means is you could take your enterprise workstations, your server machines that have local disk direct attached storage. So multiple, you know, I'll work with customers who have a 2U or a 4U box in a rack that has 12 2-terabyte drives attached to it. And you have hundreds of those, and now you're using these 100 machines to, when you add up, you have almost, you know, you have petabytes of storage available to you across local direct attached storage and server class machines running in a data center. And so I talked about the processing capabilities and kind of the scalable processing layer, and that's really what YARN, which is, stands for yet another resource navigator. So it's a software in Apache Hadoop that basically ties together all the compute resources available in a cluster and provides it for any application that wants to run in that cluster to be able to schedule jobs, allocate resources, and ensure that you can have multiple jobs and applications running at the same time. So here's an example, right? Let's say I have, what is this, a 12-node Hadoop cluster. There's one, and it's an example of the architecture, right? There's one master server, or a set of master servers for fault tolerance. And then there's a number of worker nodes. In the YARN world, the worker nodes have are represented by node managers. That's the technical software component that runs on each of those worker nodes in your cluster. And there's a master scheduler, and you can submit a data processing job, an application. The scheduler will then figure out, across my different nodes in the cluster, where do I have open RAM slots, CPU slots? Where do I have open compute power that can process that application job? And depending on where I have open compute, the scheduler will then take that application, say, okay, this application requires 6 tasks to run in parallel, and it will actually distribute and schedule them across your different nodes. So to you now, you have this 100-node cluster that has a scalable compute, and YARN is letting you schedule workloads, and you don't have to worry about where they actually run. You don't have to stand up the workload on one machine, then move it over to the other. That's taken care of by the platform. So that's the kind of the basics and the underlying power of scalable storage and scalable compute in Hadoop. So what does that mean? You know, I talked about how this complements existing technologies. So this is a great look at when to use what, and understanding the architecture, and understanding the decisions that we made in the architecture as to why Hadoop is good for certain workloads, and why relational databases are really good for certain workloads as well. So you look at this, right? On the left, I have characteristics that empower traditional relational databases. On the right, I have characteristics that power Hadoop distributions or Hadoop platforms. So start with schema. The Hadoop distributed file system that I was talking about is basically a file system. It's a file system that's striped and spread across hundreds of machines at one time. Because it's a file system, it's really easy from a scalability and from a flexibility of schema and type of files. You can load anything in there. Any kind of binary text file can be loaded into the Hadoop distributed file system. And so when it comes to writes and loading data, no matter where it comes from, mainframes, dumps from relational databases, web logs, machine generated data from systems that are outputting log files over, you know, every single second, anything is really easy to write into the Hadoop distributed file system. And so while relational systems are really tuned for when you write it in, you are writing an indexed, optimized file or optimized data set that then makes it very easy to read and query. With Hadoop, you are doing what we call ELT, extracting from a source system, loading it in, and then worrying about how to transform and query it later. So it's really quick for writes. Once you do write it in there, now you have this raw data that's sitting in your file system, and you have a flexible way to say, I want to apply this schema on top of it so I can do processing. Or I want to apply a different type of schema on the same raw data to do a different form of processing. And so with Hadoop, you have this flexibility of schemas on read. depending on how you want to process the data, you can apply different types of schemas. And that's different from a relational world where you're really optimizing into foreign keys and index tables, and in OLAP world, facts and dimension tables. And with that, you then provide a rich set of query capabilities in a SQL world, but you are optimizing for that. With Hadoop, you can run different types of unstructured processing, semi-structured processing, because it's a file system underneath, a distributed file system. And with that, there's different capabilities and different benefits and different architecture trade-offs that you have to think about. With Hadoop, because you have storage, I talked about on a node, and you have processing living on that same node, when you submit an application or that gets broken into different tasks, those tasks get scheduled and pushed down to where the data is. So if you have data striped across 10 machines, your tasks will actually run on each of those 10 machines depending on which data set it needs to, or which piece of the data set it needs to process on, which is different from a database where you have all your data in one storage system, one place, and then you run your queries and you have all the data available to it. There's different architecture trade-offs, which means they're optimized for different types of use cases. So interactive OLAP analysis, complex ACID transactions where you need a very rich schema, foreign key constraints, you're running an operational data store, that's really where relational databases shine, and they should be used. When it comes to, I have a large data set and I don't really know what, I need to explore and figure out where are interesting nuggets of data inside of it. I need to understand what kind of schema can I even apply to it, what makes sense. I need to transform it in a cost-effective way to produce more refined data set schemas. And I need to store lots of data for historical storage, for analytics across, let's say, years of data sets. That's where Hadoop and non-relational databases are really, data platforms are really good for. So it's kind of, it's important to understand the architecture trade-offs between the two different systems and how they complement each other. They don't replace, they complement relational databases and the Hadoop platform. Any questions so far? Okay. So when it comes to running Hadoop, right, you have a lot of different choices thanks to Microsoft and the work that we've done with Microsoft. You can run, if you're a Windows Server, and you have Windows Server in your enterprise or in your environment, you can download the Hortonworks data platform for free from our website, install it, and run it on Windows Server. If you are in Azure and you want a flexible Hadoop as a service, easy to deploy, single click, up and running, load your data in there off of the Windows Azure storage blobs, Azure HD Insight is a great Hadoop as a service available from Microsoft and Azure. If you have an environment where you want to bring, you want very tuned, pre-configured, powerful hardware powering your data platform, the analytics platform system is a scale-out appliance from Microsoft where you have SQL Server as part of the Parallel Data Warehouse MPP offering and Hadoop installed on nodes in the appliance, and you have it all pre-configured and ready to go. So you have different ways of consuming Hadoop. If you're on-premise, you're in the cloud, you want an appliance, there's different ways of consuming Hadoop. So let's talk about, delve deeper into the software. So I kind of gave an overview and talked about the underlying data platform, right? Talked about, I call it the core platform, the operating system of Hadoop. Distributed operating system provides distributed storage and distributed processing. And that really abstracts away the challenges of managing a distributed system. You don't have to worry about setting up networking. You don't have to worry about setting up storage. You don't have to worry about how files get put across hundreds of machines. That's taken care of you by the software and then the underlying hardware. And so you get a set of shared operational services. You get an environment to run different types of workloads in one cluster. So how do you get data into this flexible data platform? There's different mechanisms, right? So I talked about how Hadoop at its core is a file system, which means you can load any kind of data into that. And we've provided certain tools in the Hadoop ecosystem to make that easier. So if you have I'll see a lot of use cases where you have lots of different operational data stores, lots of different relational databases, lots of different SQL Server instances, and you want to consolidate data and do analytics across all those different source systems. Scoop, which stands for SQL 2 Hadoop, is a tool where you can basically point at a relational database and say, for these tables, I want to extract and load it into Hadoop. And so Scoop will take care of, in a parallelized way, dumping out flat files from those tables in SQL Server and loading them in a parallel manner into Hadoop. So you can pull all that data in. And you can push it out as well. Scoop is bidirectional. Now, if you have mainframes or you have custom data sets or generated data that's being generated, machine-generated being generated as files and being stored on a file server somewhere, or an application that's basically reading in all these different data sets from different source systems, and you want to write into Hadoop, and you want to stream it into Hadoop, there's different mechanisms available to you. There's RPC, so at a Java or C level, there's RPC available where you can use that to write directly into Hadoop in a performant manner. You also have REST, an HTTP protocol where you can actually take files, take raw data sets, and write it directly into Hadoop over HTTP. So when it comes to cloud environments like HD Insight or running Hadoop in Azure, that's where the REST protocol and the REST gateway is really, really important, because it's a very easy way to load data and files into that Hadoop environment in the cloud. There's also a project called Flume. And what Flume does is it really allows you to take machines that are generating web logs, or machines that are generating logs, basically, so an IIS environment or an Apache web server environment. And Flume will basically say, as those logs get generated, I'm going to keep checking and have this workflow, this agent workflow, of loading in a fault-tolerant manner, loading in logs they get written into Hadoop. So if as logs get updated, as log files get generated, they get streamed into Hadoop for processing. So there's different mechanisms available to load data into the Hadoop platform. Now, how many of you have used Hive or used SQL processing on top of Hadoop? A few people here. Great. So this is, let's take a step back. So I talked about storage. I talked about shared processing. Now, when it comes to, you've loaded your data in there, how do you actually make use of it? And there's different data access engines, as I'll call it, to access and run processing on that data. The most popular and common one is Hive. And it's the most common one because it provides a SQL interface to processing data in Hadoop. And so what that SQL interface does is that it provides you capabilities across these three dimensions. So because it's parallelized and because it uses a processing engine that's able to break up the query into multiple pieces and run them at the same time, it's very fast for large data sets. Hundreds of terabytes, petabytes, tens of terabytes. At those scales, you can actually run processing in minutes. It scales out, and it provides a range of SQL. So you can actually write SQL queries that will now be process on top of data that's living in Hadoop. That data that lives in Hadoop, let's say it's raw files that you load in. With Hive, you would prescribe a schema on top of it. And then Hive would know how to look at that schema and say, okay, here's my columns, here's how it translates into, I'm going to break up that data into multiple rows and run my processing on top of it. Hive provides you that capability. How many of you are familiar with MapReduce? And a few people. So Phase is a new project, and I want to talk about it. With Hive, the way Hive works is that you have a SQL interface where you'll submit a SQL query, and then that SQL query will be broken down into the processing engine that runs on top of Hadoop. That processing engine the original processing engine used to be MapReduce. What MapReduce would do was it would take a SQL query, let's say a select from where join with others table, and it would break that into multiple pieces and run those multiple pieces in parallel and push it down to where the data lived on HDFS. And on the left, that's what MapReduce is doing. With our latest release of the Hortonworks data platform, and this is new innovation coming out of the community, open source community, we've improved upon MapReduce and said, we can make them more flexible. And basically, map and reduce would mean I would have a way to specify a map task, which would break up and say, you know, if I had 100 different segments of data, a map task would run in parallel across those 100 pieces of data and be able to take an input, run a process, and provide an output, and string that together to create a Hive job. With Thaze, we make that a lot more flexible, where you're not just dependent on doing only map and reduce. You can do different types of inputs and outputs. And so with that, now you take a complex MapReduce job on the left, and you abstract away, and you don't have to go to disk in between the different pieces of the map and reduce job. So with Thaze, you have speed ups in how fast your Hive queries can run. So from minutes to seconds, or tens or fives of seconds, you can now run Hive queries. And as the platform matures, Hive is bringing different, you know, we're kind of constantly innovating across different types of SQL data types and different types of SQL functions being added into Hive, so that you have the interoperability between using a relational database and using Hive for large dimensional workloads and queries, and running queries across large fact tables in Hive. Any questions so far? Okay. So I talked about Hive, and that's probably one of the most common ways of accessing data and running processing on data in Hadoop. We have a set of new capabilities and new components that are coming online to help provide you different ways of working with and loading data in and processing data in a distributed architecture that builds on top of Apache Hadoop. One of them is Storm. So Storm provides the capability to do stream processing. With stream processing, what I mean is, let's say, you know, there's a large set of farms that are basically that really care about understanding how the crops are getting getting water, getting pesticide, getting all these different treatments, understanding weather patterns, understanding how insects are affecting them, understanding wind patterns. So what big farms and companies will do is they will deploy sensors across the entire set of farms, across every single, let's say, vineyard, if it's a wine, it's a vine, you know, if it's a vineyard, across all the different sets of vines that are out there. And those sensors are capturing data every 10, 15, 20 seconds. And then companies and organizations want to store and capture all that data. And not just capture all that data. As it's coming in every 15 seconds, they want to process and understand within the minute if they should do something differently, if they should run sprinklers, if they have to adapt, if they have something, you know, insects coming and they need to go out and take and, you know, kind of react to that in near real time. And that's what stream processing capabilities bring you. The ability to stream in data at, you know, at the scale of thousands and millions of events every single second, and then act on them by running a process that keeps looking at all the incoming streams of data, running a process, and in the Hadoop world, because everything's distributed, that process is distributed as well. So you're not just running that process on one machine, you're running it on potentially tens or hundreds of machines, so that really scales out the amount of events you can process every single second. And then you react, and you process that data, you figure out if you need to do something, and then once you process and you reacted to it, you also stream that data out into HDFS. So you store it for your historical analysis and historical records of everything that you're capturing. You don't throw any data away. That's what stream processing and that's what Storm brings, and this runs on the same set of infrastructure and same nodes that you run your Hadoop workloads. Another common data processing standard is using a NoSQL database, a non-relational database. So how many of you are familiar with NoSQL databases? Okay, how many of you are familiar with HBase? Yeah, great, a few people here. So HBase is a NoSQL database, and what a NoSQL database basically means is that I'm going to take, you know, it allows you to take the power of the hundreds of machines you have and power OLTP-type applications using the machinery and the compute and the storage resources of those hundreds of machines. So a NoSQL database provides, you know, sub-second read and write latencies on data that's scaled out. So if you have huge tables where you don't have a common set of columns across all those tables. You know, if you think about web logs, or you think about logs where you're capturing different data points about events. So, you know, big use of this technology is in smart grids and energy, right? So you're capturing a lot of metrics from each and every home that has a meter attached to it. And those meters, every 15 seconds, they're emitting different metrics about that home. Voltage, temperature, different metrics about that home. Different homes could be emitting different types of metrics depending on the point of day and depending on the collection of the time that you're collecting the data. And so now you have this stream of millions of records across different homes, different, you know, homes in different states, so you have different types of data being captured. And you want to store it in one place so you can say, I want to run a scan and do a range query across how much voltage is being used on average in the city of Dublin or the city of London. And so to do that on records that are being captured across millions and billions of rows, that's where a NoSQL database comes in, where it splits the data across multiple machines, but it has a way to stitch it together and provide a comprehensive view and a comprehensive view of a table. It doesn't do things like ACID transactions. It doesn't do things like strong key constraints against. It's more of a simple, I want to query, do read and writes of sets of records very quickly, and I'll build an application on top of it, and NoSQL databases allows you to do that. And in the Hadoop ecosystem, that's what HBase provides. And if you look at this, HBase basically uses the same infrastructure, right? So this, you use the same scalable storage, same scalable processing, and resource management infrastructure. HBase will take advantage of that so you can run it within the same cluster. And it's the power of running these services within the same ecosystem. Another emerging use case that we're seeing is search. Search here means I want to be able to use, you know, full text queries where in my data set are events happening that all happen between this time range. So using natural language to express queries on data that's living inside your data platform. That's what search technologies bring you. And so in the open source world, Apache Solr is a very mature and very powerful search engine technology. And in the Hadoop ecosystem, Apache Solr has been brought in and integrated with the Hadoop ecosystem. So now this enables a use case where I have, you know, PDFs, Word documents, Excel documents, XML, all these different documents that I want to capture, and I'm storing in the Hadoop distributed file system, right, the scalable file system. And now I want to be able to allow end analysts or information workers to be able to find those documents very quickly and find information within those documents very quickly and do the search across multiple documents. And so with search technologies like Solr, you can actually load those raw files, those documents, into your scalable storage system. So keep that for historical analysis, keep that for record keeping, for regulatory reasons, and then index them, right? So run these indexes in the distributed processing environment where you're basically asked these documents are coming in, you're indexing them and adding them to your search index. So you now have this repository of indexed Word documents, Excel documents, XML documents, all within the same index store. So you can run a query and say, tell me in these set of legal documents, right? So in legal discovery, this is a very big use case and application. Tell me in all these legal documents where the word Enron was used or where the word fraud was used. Or categorize emails for me and tell me the emails where I should be the most worried about in terms of my exposure to legal discovery. This architecture helps with that. And just like the other architectures and the other types of processing I was talking about, all of this uses the same sort of shared infrastructure to store. Yes, a question?
I have a question related to this same thing.
Yes. Great question. So the question is, the way this works, right, is you take raw documents, you index them, which is the process of creating the index that says, okay, I know where my data is in these different documents, and then you store that index somewhere. That index is your kind of your database, powering database for the search engine, because it tells you where all the data is, indexed by keywords or sets of keywords. So the question is, from an architecture's perspective, where do you store that index? I know where I'm storing the raw documents, which is in HDFS. Where do I actually store that index? Now, with this architecture, you actually have two options. So the traditional way, when Solr and Lucene came out, was to store that index, those index files, in the Solr nodes, the Lucene nodes that were running Lucene. Now, over time, we've built new capabilities where you can actually, you have an option. You can store that index on the same nodes that are powering this, that are running the search engine. You can also store that index in the Hadoop distributed file system. And so, in an architecture where your Solr engine nodes, servers, are running on the same machines and running the same cluster as your Hadoop distribution, as your Hadoop platform, they can actually talk to HDFS and read the indexes right off of HDFS. So the benefit there is that you now use the same storage infrastructure for both your raw documents and your indexes. There are performance trade-offs, right? So because it's a distributed file system, the interactive read and writes of that index is going to be slower than if you were using just raw disk directly for those indexes. So there's trade-offs there, but you have two options now. It's a good question. You can store it in HDFS or you can store it on direct disk. Yes?
Is this initiative driven by
HDFS, by the Solr people? So the question is a good question. The question is, how did this come about? Did this come from HDFS or did this come from Solr? Increasingly, the two communities are actually working closer and closer together, because what's happening is that people who are deploying Solr are also deploying Hadoop and the distributed file system, and they want to use the same infrastructure. So customers and users of Solr and Hadoop are pushing both communities to integrate tightly together. So this is coming from the users, and it's actually in Solr. Solr has the capability to use HDFS as an index store. It's implemented in Solr itself. So I talked about different data processing engines, different ways of accessing that data. And this is really important, right? When you deploy and you say you have 100 nodes that you've deployed Hadoop on, you don't want to have another 20 nodes for your NoSQL database. You don't want another 10 nodes for your search platform. You don't want another 30 nodes separate from that for your streaming ingest platform. You want to use those 100 nodes, and you want to use them in an efficient and controlled manner. And so the shared set of infrastructure, right? HDFS for storage, Yarn for figuring out where to put each task so that it doesn't clobber each other the other tasks. It does resource management across those nodes for all the different services and applications you're running. It allows you to run different types of data processing engines and different services within the same infrastructure. And it lets you isolate and provide scheduling so you don't clobber each other and you do resource isolation and management when you're running those services in one cluster. And this is kind of an evolution and departure. So if any of you were using Hadoop, let's say, 2 years ago, Hadoop 2 years ago was basically HDFS and one type of processing, MapReduce. And that was it. And so everything had to fit into a MapReduce world, a way of expressing the processing. Now, in the last year, we've moved and we've kind of abstracted away from just MapReduce. And so now you have Yarn as the resource management layer, and you have different types of data processing engines, MapReduce being just one of them, that run on top of Yarn. And that's what really makes this possible. And it makes it possible, again, where you can control and you can set limits on how much resources, right? How many CPU cores, how much RAM across your different machines each of these engines can take. You can set those limits across users as well. So if you have a multi-tenant environment where you have, you know, let's say 20 users accessing your Hadoop cluster, and those 20 users are organized into maybe three business units, right? So the marketing team, the finance team, the product team all want to use the data that's living in your Hadoop cluster. You can set controls so that marketing only gets to use 30% of the processing environment at a maximum amount of time, and the finance team gets 40%. So that way they share this common set of resources. So all of that's available across the different engines that run on top of Yarn. So we talked about the processing engines, we talked about storage. When it comes to, you know, we talked about the platform, but when running a platform in an enterprise environment, as a lot of you are very familiar with, there are key governance and data lifecycle management requirements, right? So how do you track data sets? How do you provide controls to data sets? How do you apply policies to data sets and workflows that are going through this shared environment, right? This shared Hadoop cluster? And that is the type of, that functionality to do that is what Apache Falcon, which is one of the projects in the Hadoop ecosystem, part of the Hortonworks data platform, provides. It provides the capability to say, great, you have multiple data processing environment engines that run in Hadoop. So one data set is going to go through different transformations, right? I could load that data, raw documents into Hadoop. Then I run some transformations on top of it in a processing environment. Let's say I use Hive. Then I store that process data in HBase. And then I have visualization and BI tools going directly off of HBase and present that data. Different engines are now touching that same data set as it transforms and mutates along the data workflow. With this tool, what you can do is you can actually define that workflow, that repeated workflow that gets run every day or every half a day, and you apply policies at every stage of that workflow. So a retention policy. How long do you want to keep the raw data set? You know, a lot of companies that are bound by legal regulations need to make sure that they only keep up to 7 years of data and not any more, because if they do more, they're open to discovery on those data sets. So they have 7-year retention policies on raw data sets. For cleansed data, for transformed data, you might want to have a smaller amount of retention, because it's gone through processing and you can regenerate from the source. For presented data sets, you might want to have just the last copy, so you can rebuild your presentation very quickly. You don't need to keep the whole data set every single time it gets changed. You can also define replication and backup policies for those different stages of your data set. So backups, a lot of times we'll see customers, you know, if you're familiar from the SQL Server world or from relational databases, you have one database in your primary data center, and then you have geo-redundant data centers, and you have replication out to relational systems, SQL Server, in another geo-redundant location, so you provide disaster recovery that way. The same thing applies to Hadoop systems. You'll have, you know, in a production environment, you'll have a Hadoop deployment in your main data center, and then you want to have a DR location. That DR location could be another data center. That DR location could be in the cloud. And so you can define policies that say, for this stage of the data set of the workflow, I want to publish and I want to replicate to another data center, or I want to replicate to the cloud. And so what that really provides is that you have, you know, multiple environments. You have on-premise Hadoop deployments, you have in the cloud Hadoop deployments with HD Insight and Hadoop running on Azure. And you can have workflows that are running on your on-premise cluster that are publishing different sets of data sets through that workflow out into the Windows Azure storage blobs, out into running HD Insight clusters in the cloud. And then you can do further processing on top of that, or use that cloud environment as DR in a backup environment, or use it for iterative processing in a kind of in a controlled manner where you spin it up and you spin it down on data sets that's been pushed out to the cloud. So that data lifecycle management can be done across your Hadoop cluster on-premise and then into the cloud as well. Now, with these different data engines and with these data lifecycle management and data workflow policies, right, Hadoop provides a set of security administrative features. So if you've used Hadoop over the years, security in Hadoop has really matured over the years. It kind of started with, hey, if you're going to use Hadoop, put it into a cluster, wall off access to the cluster, only let your trusted people go into the cluster and access it. Hadoop's come a long way from that. Now through tools, so this is the Apache Ranger project, another Apache project that is out there in the open source environment. You can define common authorization policies across different engines and different storage mechanisms in Hadoop. So if you have a data set in HDFS, and then you have a Hive table that's been defined on top of that data set, that's powered by that data set, and then you have pieces of that data living in HBase, in your NoSQL platform, you can have a policy that says, my marketing team has access to these sets, this data set only. They can do reads, they can do, and they can only do reads. My operations team can actually load and write those data sets. You can define that level of role-based authorization across different access engines and no matter where the data set is in the Hadoop platform. And this is an example of a tool that lets you define those policies, monitor those policies, and edit those policies all from one place, across HDFS, across Hive, across HBase, across Storm, across all these different data engines. Because the power of a modular platform is that you can build and innovate and create many different ways of doing stream processing or OLTP applications or analytical processing. The challenge is that now you have a set of different components that lets you access the data in different ways. And so it's important to have centralized security mechanisms that work across those different access patterns, access mechanisms. Another key kind of deployment architecture that we see is Hadoop is deployed in a data center, right? So you have to have multiple tens or hundreds of nodes. You install Hadoop on it. And then the way to access that cluster is through, we're seeing it more and more, is through REST protocols. So REST protocols to load data in, read data, REST protocols to submit Hive queries, submit jobs, submit MapReduce processing jobs, and REST protocols to monitor the system. And so with in the Hadoop, in the Hortonworks state platform, the Hadoop ecosystem, customers and users will deploy gateway service, the Knox gateway, to basically provide that REST authorization and protection endpoint so that you have your clusters behind the firewall and all your traffic, your ODBC, JDBC traffic, your browsers to look at the systems, to kind of monitor the systems, your REST clients to load data in, to submit jobs, all that goes through the gateway. And the gateway provides one mechanism to say, to plug into LDAP and say an Active Directory and authorize each of those requests and implement policies to authorize each of those requests. And so this is a very common deployment architecture that we see with Hadoop. How many of you who've used Hadoop have actually gone through and installed and set up the cluster? Okay. No one in this room. Hadoop can be pretty complex to set up. Multiple components, imagine setting up a 100 node cluster with components of software on every single machine. It's very complex. And so it's really important to have a centralized deployment infrastructure and tool that can say, I know that I have 100 nodes, and I'm going to install software on each of those 100 nodes and abstract it away from the system administrator, so the system administrator doesn't have to go in every single node and deploy software and manage it in that manner. And so that's what Ambari is. In the Hadoop ecosystem, in the Hortonworks data platform, Ambari is the tool and the framework, really, to deploy, install, and then once it's deployed, to manage and monitor the entire cluster, be it 10 nodes, 100 nodes, thousands of nodes. And so, I have some screenshots. This is Ambari on Windows is one of those features that's coming very shortly, and we're really excited to bring it out to make the whole deployment mechanism easier. So just to kind of walk through the process, right? If you have 100 nodes of Windows Server that's set up, you kind of install the software, the Ambari server, on one of those machines, and then you tell Ambari. You give it the host names of all your 100 nodes. And so then once you give it the host names of all of your 100 nodes, Ambari will take advantage and take control and abstract away and basically install its agents on all those 100 nodes and start pushing the software, installing the software. With, you can choose and you can kind of manage which services you want to install in your Hadoop, in your 100 node cluster. So we talked about all these different services, right? HDFS, Yarn, HBase, Pig, Zookeeper. You can choose which services you want to install, and you can choose which hosts you want to install them to. So you have that control, and you have that control from one install environment without having to go to each and every node. You have the capability to configure how much memory, how much CPU, what authentication, what users you have on all of those machines. You have the ability to control where your data is going to live. All these different configuration mechanisms that you're used to from other software, right? You can do through Ambari and install Hadoop in that kind of flexible, configured way. So it really provides kind of control to the system administrator when you're deploying Hadoop. And once you're deployed, you can see kind of resource utilization, uptime. If you have 100 nodes, how many nodes are down? Which services are down? Get alerts about them all through one interface. And so, as a sysadmin, you don't have to worry that you have 100 nodes, and you don't have to go in every single 100 node and actually operate and figure out what's going wrong. You can look at it from one system and kind of get these notifications and get these metrics. And for those of you who are using System Center, this is like I call Ambari a framework because there's a UI to it, and so there's an end-to-end web interface that you can deploy and use. But it's also an API, and so you can plug in other tools. And so we have there's a System Center Operations Manager plugin that provides the capability to use Ambari and use System Center to actually visualize and look at across all your nodes and do alerts and do management functionality. And that's my slide. So wanted to walk through what we had in this, what Hadoop provides from data lifecycle management, from processing engines. It's really exciting because we're at the start here, where a lot of more people are adopting and using distributed scale-out infrastructure, processing, storage, and so. The innovation's going really, really quickly. Every 3 months, there's new projects, new ways of processing the data that you're storing in Hadoop. And so it's the start now. It's kind of early, but we're getting a lot of interest, a lot of traction. And it's a very exciting world where we're doing more and more applications on very granular data sets because we have a scalable system. So I want to thank everyone for coming. And if you have any questions, I'll be here for another 15, 20 minutes. Thanks. Thank you.